Passion, drive, and patience. That's the formula for winning championships and is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. They have superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and much, much more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, they've got it all. eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber and not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Let's keep your ride or die alive today at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
The following is a production of Dirty Mo Media.
I'm prepared. I've got a case. We'll talk about that case on Monday. But I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I'm looking forward to getting in a room with those guys and having a discussion. Hey guys, welcome to Actions Detrimental. I'm Denny Hamlin, driver of the number 11 Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing and co-owner of 2311 for Bubba Wallace and Tyler Reddick. My co-host
is Jared Allen, the purple vest guy, if you've been listening to this show for the past couple weeks, and Denny's social media guy who more or less follows Denny around every weekend between February and November.
Yeah. Jared, I have beef with you. You cheated on me.
Oh,
you cheated on us. Just admit you cheated on us.
Well, I mean, Bubba's also a pro sport client.
I get it, but we never got an invitation. Jared, well, we many weekends we like to go to escape rooms, and Jared scouts them out, and it's that are we not part of your team? We even have a group text, the NASCAR Road Band.
Bubba texted Nico and I in a group text in the afternoon and said, hey, we got an escape room lined up. You guys want to go? And it's like, yeah, sure. Mm. We'll be your plus two. So it was Bubba, Amanda, Blaney, and his girlfriend, me and Nico. Nico is Bubba's purple vest guy. And then Bubba's friend, Mike, who I don't know his last name, but not Michael Jordan.
Yeah. So, usually it's kind of me, Austin, Ty, Larson, Nico, Jared, who go to these escape rooms. You said nothing matches the Vegas. No. Nothing will ever
which
beat
you
the
didn't
Vegas
go to.
I didn't. No, I didn't.
You cheated on us.
I forget why.
You had that tournament, that blackjack tournament.
Oh, that's right. Dude, I won. I won so much money during that. Like, I'm glad it was worth it to miss it.
But that escape room was good. That was a Saw themed escape room, and I don't think there's any escape room out there that's going to match, at least the coolness of an escape room, right? Because they have like Saw characters in the escape room, and they have live actors. It was really good.
So, how does it compare to the one that was in California?
If I'm power ranking our escape room experiences so far, the Saw one is first, the California one is second.
Okay.
And this one we did this past weekend is third. But I really think it just, the Saw one was designed to be like this, magnificent escape room, right? The California one was its own building in a sense. And then this one we did last weekend was in a mall. So like the walls are just dividers.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, tonight, big national championship game for the men's basketball. We have San Diego State, which is Joe's alma mater.
Really?
Yeah, it is. I think that was his first coaching job.
I did not know that.
Yeah, interesting. Versus UConn, Rod's team. Rod from Rod Moskowitz from Pro Sport Management, my agent. He is a nuts UConn fan. So, boy, UConn been blowing everyone out so far. I'm gonna go with San Diego State just because, like, I don't know what the spread is, but probably 8.5, 9, something like that. I just think that typically you get a little tighter during those championship games. I would know, but
Yeah, Rod, the UConn fan, also is like, San Diego State will probably beat us. Said they have, I don't know anything about San Diego State or UConn, but he said they just have way more length than UConn, way more height.
Really? Okay. I thought UConn had a couple guys that are beasts down low, and their shooting has been absolutely crazy. You didn't really hear a whole lot about UConn during the season, but they got 8 losses, and I was wondering, like, who beat them 8 times? It's interesting. They've got a really great team, fun to watch. They kind of remind me of the Golden State Warriors, to be honest with you, only a little bit more inside game when Golden State was in their heyday a few years ago.
Have you watched much of the tournament this year? Like, has it been a good tournament?
Oh my gosh. Yes, there was a buzzer beater in the Final Four for San Diego State and FAU.
Yeah.
It's funny because on my group text with my buddies, they were so Greg Fernelli, he had to go get his daughter or something. He's like, there's a minute left. I'm putting it on pause. Don't tell me who won in the group text. And right away, like 30 seconds later, now the game, I guess, had lost power. I had to step out as well. And I just texted the group, no need to watch it. San Diego State just hit a buzzer beater to win. That was 5 minutes before the end of the game. And it happened. So it was funny that it worked out that way. It's been a pretty good. I haven't watched. I mean, for the last few years, I've not filled out a bracket. I've just been too busy. I don't have a fantasy football team. I know I'm totally breaking a bro code when it comes to this stuff, but it is what it is. I'm too busy for it, but I love watching it for sure.
That's good. Yeah, I'm the same way. Once we get into race season, I feel like I just don't pay much attention to any other sports besides like the big events.
Yeah. Well, speaking of big events, the last thing we got to talk about for racing is the Masters this week. Love the Masters. Man, it's going to be exciting, the build up over the, like, how do the live players play, right? I mean, that's kind of the argument, and live is basically a new golf series that broke away that we're paying a bunch of guys a lot of money to build this league up to challenge the PGA.
Yep.
And that series. But they have been allowed now to compete in the major events for the PGA. So some of the best players in the world, Cam Smith, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, and his heyday, he's probably dropped off a little, although I thought he won this weekend. Pretty sure he won. Man, they're going to be contenders to win. And if a live player wins the Masters, all hell will break loose on that.
I mean, the odds are a live player will win, right?
No, there's more PGA players than live players in the Masters.
Okay.
So PGA's got a strong advantage on that. But they're going to compete. They're definitely going to compete. So I can't wait to watch the Masters. It's something that we used to be able to do. It used to be an off week for us be able to watch, but we're going to go dirt racing and get pounded with dirt in our face during Easter. So that's fantastic.
We'll get to that later.
Yeah. It was a big weekend. I'd tell you it was a big weekend for Hendrick Motorsports. That's for sure. They won the race with Kyle Larson. They won their appeal. Certainly, it was a very unprecedented appeal where you had the committee agree that they broke the rules, but yet took away the points penalty, which that's really the only thing that matters. So surely NASCAR is livid about this. I think they showed their lividness by sending both of Bowman and Byron's cars to the R&D center after the race. And I would suspect that will go on for a little while because they do not, they obviously, NASCAR, I said this in my media Friday that NASCAR was very clear to us as the teams that do not screw around with this car. You've asked us to do these single source parts, so don't mess with them. And if you do, the fine will, and the points will be so heavy that it's going to deter you from doing it. I wonder if the panelists were privy to that information, though, because that whole, those words that Steve O'Donnell spoke to us as the teams when they all sat us down and said, "Here's the new points penalties. for these next gen cars. You know, he was very adamant and says, I'm telling you, this is, it's like this, and it's so harsh because, you know, you shouldn't be messing with them, and it messes up our whole business model as teams. And for, you know, frankly, it made me mad as the owner of 2311, because like, I don't want to have to go hire three design engineers to figure out how to screw with factory parts, right?
It made you mad
that, you know, they got off on the point.
Oh, the Hendrick.
Yeah, because you know, it was supposed to be a big penalty because they broke a big rule, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's the single biggest rule on the only other thing you could do really is have counterfeit parts. That's maybe even bigger. But I saw Jordan Bianchi's article where all these, you know, he was so smart. Given everyone, say, hey, it'll be totally anonymous, tell me what you think about this. And he asked 9 crew chiefs, 3 competition directors. And I mean, you can read a couple of their, just give me a couple of their quotes, Jared.
So the first one, and I like this one the most. How can you be half pregnant? Said a crew chief. If Hendrick truly did something, then why did they get their points back? And if they didn't do anything, then why fine and suspend them? Makes no sense. I don't understand it. And then another crew chief. I'm disappointed. The one thing NASCAR has made clear is we're not supposed to mess with vendor parts, period. They've been as clear as day. If you do that, you're going to get hammered. So then explain to me how they get their points back. The one thing that really, really, really matters in the big picture, I don't get it all.
Yeah, I mean...
And then another one. It's stupid.
This
as
is
hell.
The sentiment I can tell you. I know the team part of it, the owners part of it. The teams are mad about this. There's no question. NASCAR's mad about it, and the teams are mad about it. There's only one team that's happy about the result, that's for sure. Because it does, this breaks what this whole car's business model was built around. But again, you know, if the panelist did not understand, if they use past precedent for penalties of money and points, then that's, you can't use those precedents because this is a new rule, a new age with the cars. So I'm wondering, you know, if that was an argument or not by Hendrick, but man, yeah, to say that, yes, we agree that they broke the rules, but we're going to give them this back. It's just a weird spot, and you can bet your ass that NASCAR is going to revamp that rule book ASAP to say, you know, probably here it is. It's all points, no money. And, you know, to try to make it crystal clear that you can't go back on that. So, you know, my question with this is that now that this is over, why can't we be transparent? These are supposed to be factory off-the-shelf parts that are untouched. So, you know, like when we got a DQ last year at Pocono and we took the nose out, we put it behind our hauler for everyone to see, TV to come do a story about it. Why can't we be transparent? What is there to hide? There's no information or proprietary information that we should hide from the media or public, right? Like, Hendrick, if you're innocent, okay, show us.
Yeah.
How this was right. And NASCAR, if it was wrong, show us how it was wrong. Like, this would be we're missing facts, and it's causing so much speculation in the media world and in the public that, you know, you really need to be transparent to show these people what it all is going on. And certainly if you want to deter it from happening, and I said it last week, then call these people out. Show up, you know, show the people what rule was broken. We used to have parts all around the back of the hauler, NASCAR hauler, that they would confiscate that were they deemed illegal before tech. I mean, there would be, it'd be like a yard sale back there, back in the days when we used to build everything our own. But yeah, these are factory parts that you should be able to buy off the shelf. So why not just set it out there and show us. Show us what it is, because the speculation for 2.5 weeks or whatever it is was just crazy. But
I guess it's still possible that after this colleague appeal, we could get that transparency.
No chance.
No?
No. No way.
Do you think there's even, like, if you know, the penalty and everything was overturned for Hendrick. Why are, like, I feel like NASCAR should just cancel this colleague appeal, because certainly they can't, the ruling can't be any different now, right? If they're, if the, they've broken the same rule, right, or are accused of breaking the same rule, we can't have on Wednesday or Thursday, whenever this comes out, that, oh, colleague's penalty stands, but Hendrick's penalty was changed.
Jared, that would you're be, being way too rational. Like, I mean, I'm assuming the panelists will be different.
Right, that's what I'm their saying. Argument, this is going to be...
Their argument
it's a whole
may
new
be
case,
different.
Right?
Right? Absolutely.
Unless colleague just goes and gets Hendrick's people and say, hey, here's...
Now the shitty part, would be, right, is that they uphold colleagues.
Right.
And, you know, from what I understand, they did absolutely nothing. They just received this that maybe was accidentally sent to them. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a no-win situation for anyone, this colleague appeal, for sure, because... I think they are the most innocent party of anyone, but I don't know. Maybe some panelists will see it differently. You just don't know. But I see people really upset with the process. You have to have this though, right? I mean, the way NASCAR set this up, where they levy the penalties and the fines, and then they have an independent panel judge on that. I think that's the right thing to do. I really do. I think you have to have an independent party. And certainly over the last 18 months, we've seen that the panel has ruled against NASCAR more than they've agreed with NASCAR, with an exception. One exception. There's been one penalty that has been increased in the last 18 months. That was Denny Hamlin's penalty from a loose wheel. Somehow a loose wheel cut and dry was increased for my 11 car last year. People forget about that. So I don't know.
Before, I'm curious. So first question, do you have, with the parts coming from different manufacturers, do you have a surplus of these parts at your race shop?
Surplus? No, nothing is surplus.
Okay. So then hypothetically, of course, you receive a part that doesn't fit on your car and you don't have a surplus of parts. How do you go about that?
Jared, this
hypothetically,
this was not a fit issue. let's just call it as, this was not a fit issue. I understand that it was probably the defense, but it was not a fit issue, right? But to answer your question fairly, you probably go to NASCAR and
I think
say
you already answered my question.
Yeah, you probably go to NASCAR and say, "Hey, this isn't fitting properly. We need to make adjustments." And what they will probably do is say, okay, make adjustments. And then NASCAR will say, send us pictures, or we'll send somebody by the shop to approve whether this is the correct way. And we approve that you're not changing the fit to be a performance advantage. I think that's typically how it would work. Because I know early on when we had fit issues, when the next gen car just started, they would request the teams, if you have to cut something, hammer something to fit, like, send us pictures so we can give you the thumbs up before you put a wrap on it.
And now, given the track record of the appeals panel over the last 12 months, 18 months, is it worth it for teams to find these loopholes and then, you know, break the rules in a sense, knowing that they have a good case to go to court that they could win? Like, is the potential gain outweigh the potential penalty?
Yes, if NASCAR doesn't beat you to the punch. I think they're going to change the rules sooner than later, as they should.
But not till next year, right? The rule.
I don't know. They update rules weekly, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know about these big ones, but they do change rules in the rule book weekly to, you know, when something comes up unforeseen that they didn't see coming, like, they'll put rules in to kind of make sure that, you know, they keep this thing organized. So I think yes is the short answer to your question, that yes, this opens it up to the teams to have a case to do it. But would you really take that chance that maybe your three panelists don't have the same opinion? And then do you want to spend $100,000 per car you know, risking the cheating. I don't think so. I think that NASCAR, trust me, they are not happy about this at all. There's nobody happy about this for sure, other than Hendrick. So they had a great week. Congratulations to them. They made a case. They won the case. So it all worked out. But you know, they had a great weekend, obviously, with William Byron and Kyle Larson.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We didn't have such a great week. You know, when we were starting this podcast, I was, kind of waking myself up and slapping myself in the face. It's like, oh, this is just one of those weeks where, like, I don't want to do this today.
Dale Jr. told you what?
He's like, hey, man, you're just going to have weeks where you don't want to do it. And I'm like, yep. Well, this is my first one. I don't know what episode we're on, but I don't have a whole lot of motivation. A lot of that stems around my race, and it stems around having the fastest car in Richmond again and not winning. And not only not winning, but finishing 20th. Just so agitated. I'm agitated. I was super agitated after the race. Me and my crew chief had some disagreements and stuff about some things. And, I think that's healthy, by the way. I think that it's good to every now and again, to challenge each other to do better. And I actually like it when he challenges me as a driver to be better with my skill set, my technique. That's what makes me better, right? He opens my eyes to, and I think that really he revamped my career in 2019 with challenging me in different ways to be a better race car driver. And, certainly things didn't pan out for us on the 11 car. We came back from a pit road penalty, the first pit road penalty. And it's crazy. I knew during the race, before the race, I was like, if I have a very good car, which I'll know probably in 10 to 15 laps of the race, all I need to do is chip away a couple spots here and there and no mistakes. And we'll win the race. I just feel that confident in my skill set at that racetrack and the techniques I use. I get a speeding penalty right off the bat. First pit stop that came from. So the pit road has bends to it. So the first, I think, four sections of pit road is curved. So NASCAR does their pit road speed based on the very inside of that curve. So you actually can run well above pit road speed if you're running up where you're supposed to by the wall.
Does it take you longer to get from segment to segment?
Yes, it takes you longer, so your speed is higher, right? And they're pretty conservative with how they do the pace car speed anyway. So we have it down to a pretty good science of how much extra we can speed in certain sections. But down at the end of pit road where it curves again, right around pit box 10 or so, Michael McDowell was my mark on the pit exit I can then speed up. Well, Joey Logano, he left his pit stall and he gassed it up real quick, trying to get, beat me off pit road. And I gassed up real quick to get back even with him. And it was before my Michael McDowell mark where I can start to speed again. And so I knew that I was, busted before. But my team made a great call again to go long. I think we pitted seven laps later we went through the field. We started that run 14th. And I got probably half of those back on the restart, I got three or four positions there, and then just started going through the field. And I knew like my car was so freaking strong. But we won the stage. And then, you know, we got control of the race at that point. Like at that point, it's so frustrating because it's our race to lose, because once you put the fastest car out front, which I was very certain we had the fastest car, us in the 19, I thought were head and shoulders over the rest of the field. And neither one of us win. It's so goddamn frustrating. But we just both lost it on pit road in a different kind of manner. Like we had a, you know, I came in first on the green flag pick stop, had a 22 second stop, which is like the less than one percentile of pit stop times in our whole series. Luckily for me though, you know, what would have been a bigger detriment was that right front tire changer, not go back and re-tighten that right front tire. And then I have a flat tire or the wheel comes off, then I have suspension or I think it's a 2-lap penalty now. At least he recognized that wheel's not tight. And although it took a long time for them to go back, re-jack it up and re-tighten it, and it was 22 seconds, you know, hey, I lost 12 seconds that run, you know, that, yep, that stop, and I went from leading the race to 11th. But yeah, it's just tough because all you have to do is execute once you get out there. And I thought that it was going to be smooth sailing from there. I never pushed my car one bit. And we're fast. We, you know, my team's just got a great setup for that racetrack, and, you know, pair that with, you know, how many laps I've got there, how many, you know, my technique there, like we were going to be tough to beat. But, you know, before that, you know, obviously have to address the JJ incident. It's very, very obvious, people, that I had no intention to wreck JJ Yaley. Why would I wreck JJ Yaley for 30th place? I was dead last in the back of the pack trying to make my way through. A caution didn't help us. I don't even think we pitted because we didn't have tires anyway. So it's not like I needed a caution. But I got pinched off. So I got to the outside of JJ off of turn 4. You could see that a little bit on the in-car camera. And I had somebody, I think the 38 or I don't know, 21, somebody on the outside of me, and he pinched me up into them. And so I checked up real quick and I was like, damn it, JJ. And so what I was trying to do was trying to get right behind him and then go in the corner and show my left front and kind of just, you know, get him wedged off the bottom so I can just take the bottom on him. Cause I couldn't complete the pass on the outside. But really I went back and I couldn't realize, cause it happened so quick. Like, what the f- happened? Like, how did I misjudge this that badly? And I looked at the data and I saw that, you know, JJ checked up about 100 feet early and got on the brake quite a bit sooner. But it's still my responsibility. Don't get it twisted. I'm not blaming JJ for any of this whatsoever. He's just out there trying to get a good finish for his team, and they've been making that 15 car quite a bit better. So I definitely am not one of those guys that tries to hurt one of the lower teams. I do my best to help lower teams all the time. But I just made a mistake, and I tried to drive in there right there on his bumper and then start to cut low, but I never even got to the cut low part, because when I drove in there and I was up his ass anyway, as soon as he checked up, I just ran right in the back of him. And I mean, I slammed on the brakes as hard as I could, but it's just one of those deals that I fucked up, you know. It certainly wasn't deliberate. I hate it for JJ. We were teammates together, JGR, early in my career. He's a great dude, and I like everyone on that Rick Ware team. So we were pitted right next to him, and you know, I knew JJ was going to be super pissed, because when you're in his position, right, you're just trying to, you know, make laps, make your program better, get a good finish that day, and all of a sudden you just get jacked from behind. He never even had a chance to catch the car because I went into him with such a rate of speed. But you know, yeah, I looked and I didn't drive it any differently than I had every other lap, but I was too close to him, and when he hit the brakes and I was still in the gas, it was game over for him. So apologize to them. I'll reach out to JJ and figure out, and or the team, and figure out if I can do anything to help them recover from this. So that's my bad.
I did think it was interesting. On one of the camera angles on that long pit stop that you had, you said JJ was pitted in front of you. His team was either, they were either, obviously they're disappointed, right, that their car gets wrecked and you're leading the race and you're pitting. They were either happy that you guys had a bad pit stop, or they were like the away fans behind a basketball team, right? That guy's shooting a free throw and they're trying to cause all this commotion to alter the result of the pit stop.
Well, you know what? One thing I do got to give props to is JJ, because I saw quotes from his crew chief that right after the wreck, they said to JJ, all right, let's get this car fixed and then go out there and get them. And JJ responded, why don't y'all just concentrate on getting the car fixed? Like, you know, I appreciate that from him. And, you know, what motivation do I have to wreck someone running 30th when I'm 31st? It didn't benefit me whatsoever. It just screwed their day up. So, again, everyone makes mistakes. I say it every week, and I'm going to be the first to always admit when I feel like I totally had a blunder, and that was a dramatic blunder, just a huge miscalculation.
Was, speaking of Truex and how good he was all day, was it a miscalculation on their part to more or less run out of tires at the end of that race, strategy-wise?
Well, that the way the race played out, what I noticed is that at Richmond, NASCAR's pretty scarce with their tire allotment, which sometimes it makes for pretty good strategy when you have to manage your tires. I think Xfinity Series at times gets very interesting because some people will pit, some will not, because they want to save tires for the end. Maybe there's a shootout, maybe not. But there was more cautions at the end of the race, and even at the beginning, I guess, from the JJ wreck, that some people decided to take tires, some did not. And typically that race goes green, the last stage, which that's the argument for my crew chief. You know, when I kind of challenged him on strategy, he was like, you know, look at the last X races here, right? They all go green.
That was his argument.
Yeah. And mine was like, let's make a call to win the race. The call is, you know, I'm running ninth right at the end of the race. He was trying to get me a good or better finish by, you know, giving me a strategy I could run fifth or sixth with. And, you know, again, I'm in the heat of the moment and I'm really upset about the day. And I'm like, give me a call to win the race. You know, either if you're running me long, run me all the way long. Or if you're going to run me short, run me way short. At the time I was 5 seconds behind the leader. So that's about 2.5 laps or three laps I needed to pit, before the leaders, and I would have been the leader. And then if I got 2 or 3 lap older tires than the leader, good luck passing me. I'll be honest with you. Like, I just think that I would have had a really good shot. But the caution came out, and you know, either one of those strategies, Josh Berry had that strategy of staying out, either one of them would work. But you know, when you think about it, you got to think about it from the team standpoint. They can't guess for a unknown caution, right? So they're going to make the solid play to get the solid finish. Me at home, I want to win. You know, 20th, 6th, doesn't matter to me. Like the speeding penalty at the end I had, I'm running 13th, guys. Like I'm trying to get to 11th. So I should have finished is like 11th, 12th, something like that with, you know, but I finished 20th because I'm pushing on pit road to try to get back some of these spots that we lost throughout the day. And so, you know, the second penalty, it wasn't meaningless. It cost me probably, you know, 8-9 spots on my finishing position, which they all matter. Like all these points matter, but I'm just hot under the collar because, you know, I'm trying to get to a win total. And if you're going to do it, you're going to have to execute perfectly. All these races from here to the end of my career, whenever that is. And I just feel like, damn it, we've had so many races where if we just can control the race on pit road, we will win them. And we just, things haven't worked out. But it's tough because JGR, I thought, had the dominant cars. The Toyota, I thought, were dominant cars, especially in the long run. And to not have any of them winning, You know, it forces us to kind of look at us and figure out how we can get better for sure.
Yeah, I put you off on a tangent there, but the Truex stuff with the tires you were mentioning.
Yeah, so he had to pit, and if you didn't notice, he had to pit at the end and put on scuff tires. So he was on 6-lap tires at the end, and everyone around him was on brand new tires. So he must have pitted sometime throughout the day, maybe on the early pit, and didn't have tires left. So, yeah, it's a tough thing for Truex. It's right before the race, during the driver intros, I asked Truex, says, we going to get back to our winning ways today? He's like, damn, I hope so, man. It's been miserable. So, man, I know he's frustrated. He's as frustrated as I am right now, for sure. And we're about to go into our JGR meeting and hash it all out here in a couple hours. But yeah, it's just, you know, we mess up and the Hendrick guys execute. The 5 car was nothing special by any means, but he had executed a great day. He had one incident on pit road I saw with a 99, probably cost him a second, maybe two. But so many of these races are won by teams just not up. And it's something that certainly I got to clean up on my end. I got plenty to look in the mirror at to get better at. And I want to get back to winning because these finishes are unacceptable. Especially the way we're running. I know a media member asked me this weekend, hey, you got the second best average running position of anyone in the field. You're 11th in points. Can you explain that? I said, yeah, green, white checkers. I've lost so many freaking spots at the green into green and white checkers, but this race was just an absolute disaster from a execution standpoint, especially on my end.
Yeah, Truex's last win was actually at Richmond 50 races ago, September 11th, 2021. One thing Kyle said after winning the race, and it's funny because I've watched him do this before a few sprint car races, traveling with him, is he went back and was watching old videos of himself in 2021 to see what he was doing, how he was talking, what his mindset was, and mentioned that with this next gen car, it's difficult to keep your confidence up or get your confidence up in the first place. Do you feel that way?
Sometimes, sure. I mean, you always have self-doubt, but I mean, I don't think anyone would ever think, oh, Kyle Larson would never self-doubt himself, right? He knows he can go to a World Outlaws race or a high limit race and kick everyone's ass any day of the week. And, you know, you're always going to put him at one of the top of the list as far as naturally talented race car drivers. But sometimes when you're in a slump, you know, on a finishing position, I don't think Kyle's been in a slump necessarily on how he's been running. I just think he's been in a slump finishing, same as us, right? It just takes one win. I thought this was going to be the one for us. We're like, all right, let's kickstart our season off for real now. Like, we're about to go into, you know, to Martinsville's, the tracks that we're super good at, Richmond's. It's time to start kicking ass. This is where we start kicking in the gear every year. And that's what makes me frustrated about it. But for Kyle, you know, huge momentum boost now for him. Josh Berry, great to see him get a good run with great strategy. Michael McDowell got a great finish as well with using the same strategy, just going long. And it honestly, it's easy to play that strategy when you're not running well. And a lot of times you see teams that you can kind of rank them, and there are official rankings of crew chiefs that improve their driver's position or drivers that finish way better than they're running. A lot of it is they have nothing to lose. They know they're not going to win. They're not even going to run top 10 or 15 unless they throw a Hail Mary. And when sometimes the Hail Mary gets caught. And at the end, when the caution came, it they caught their receivers, Josh Berry and Michael McDowell did. Bowman, another solid run. He's not running as good as his teammates, but he is just plucking along and leading the points by just being there every week. He's
consistency.
He's consistency, and he's executing, not making any mistakes. So Bomish finished eighth, it says, scoring his sixth top 10 finish in 7 races. Yeah, he's just kind of top 10-ing the field to death. Now, you won't be able to get away with that in the playoffs for certain, but, you know, if you win a regular season championship, that's 15 bonus points. That'll give you a little cushion. So that they're really doing a great job for sure. Austin Cinder, you know, we're kind of getting...
Before you move down to the... We're reading off the loser sheet. Another person who's not on this winner's list, but if you want to give them their flowers, Ty also had his third straight top 10 this weekend. Yep. After three episodes ago, I think you had talked about, hey, just focus on being your best, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
I say, do as I say, not as I do, for sure. Yeah, Ty, I don't know. I think I've passed him about 20 times in the last 2 weeks, but he continues to beat me in results every week. So maybe I need to kind of look at that and figure out what I need to do. But he was solid. Wasn't great, but he was solid. And I think, you know, given his inexperience, he's just going to take this and continue to get better and better. And now we're starting to see him reel off three straight top tens in a row. That's really good for that team and his confidence, because I think Ty is one of those confidence drivers that he can get. He's very similar to Bubba. People don't realize he's very similar to Bubba in his emotions, where he can get super high or can get super low. And so
that's kind of what I was alluding to with what you said to him a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a tough day after practice at Phoenix, but he's rebounding. He's rebounding really, really well. So I'm happy for him. Good kid.
All right. Go back to your losers.
Yeah. Y'all, I mean, y'all put on a sheet here, just winners and losers. You know, I listed the Larson, Barry, McDowell, Bowman losers, besides myself, which is the obvious one. Austin Cindric, man, it just, for whatever reason, he's not running that well. Finished 28th. I know that it looked like he was struggling. You know, it's not on the list, but the first thing that came to my mind was Tyler Reddick. You know, he, after a win last week, you know, I think we just got to figure out with Tyler how to keep him under the tire. He gets the most out of his race car, but sometimes it really, on tracks like these, it can really be a detriment to your long run speed. And he's had a really tough track record at Richmond anyway, but yeah, we got to work with that 45 team. The 23 team, you know, of course, Michael's in town sitting on the box, and you know, there's no extra pressure that Jordan's sitting on your pit box, but we fumbled the ball there on pit road, and especially during a green flag pit stop, you cannot make a mistake, because especially a penalty mistake, because you'll go laps down. And so they rebounded, but they were going to run in the top 10. Again, Bubba needed that for his confidence, and then instead he finishes bad and probably is pissed off as I am right now. Blaney says he had a pair of pit road miscues, damaged Blaney's chances Sunday. He finished 26th. Another track where Blaney usually is super fast at the first half and then not so great at the second half. Again, I kind of put him in that same category with Tyler Reddick, that like they can get so much speed out of their cars that it's sometimes a detriment at these types of racetracks, like that style. So you really got to be able to adapt. And Allmendinger was not good. Chandler Smith, he was back there with when I went to the back of the pack. They were always one of the first couple cars that I passed, and so I was like, man, the Cola guys were struggling all day for sure. But that does remind me, because we didn't go over the truck and Xfinity race. Shout out to Chandler Smith for getting his very first Xfinity win. He is doing phenomenal in the Xfinity series. Just in my mind, way out doing expectations. I thought he was very, very good in Kyle's trucks last year, but you always wonder, like, is that the truck? Is it, you know, because Kyle's trucks historically have just been really, very really good, fast compared to the field. But now he's going there, and Kolek's got, yeah, I actually consider it very close race between JGR, Kolek. You know, JGR's maybe better overall at all types of tracks, but I don't, yeah, maybe I could argue that, because Allmendinger smoked, everyone was way faster than the field at COTA. But shout out to Chandler Smith for getting his very first Xfinity win. That kid is very, very good. He's going to be in the Cup Series full time in a few years. You can bookmark that for sure, because he's got the talent to do it. He's a great driver, and awesome to see. And then next one was the truck race at Texas. Great to see Carson Hocifar get his very first win. Super exciting. I was very disappointed for Nicholas Sanchez. again, is one of those drivers where you're thinking, well, he's winning an ARCA, but what does that mean, right? I mean, ARCA is just, you know, struggles a ton. There's only just a couple really good cars, and but he was winning in them. And now he comes to the Truck Series, and that dude is lightning fast. Now, he is in, like I talked about, the KBM truck, the switch from Toyota to Chevy. But it appears that they kept their speed over the year at KBM by switching manufacturers. You know, their trucks do look very, very strong, very fast. But Nick Sanchez did a absolutely great job all day long. He led the entire race. But you could just tell at the end of it, he was getting a little bit tight. Like, he wasn't entering the corner quite as hard as I saw him enter when he was looser in the middle of the race, beginning of the race. And it kept allowing Zane Smith to inch on him. And, you know, it just, you could tell how that race was unfolding. It's like, Zane's eventually going to get position on him if he doesn't just race looser, right? You know, drive his truck further on the edge. But he's trying not to make a mistake. The last thing you want to do as a leader is, like, you know, drive in too deep,
right,
and give the win to second place because you've missed your line. So you do, that's why you see in these races, all series, the leader, if second is within shouting distance, they do tighten up a little bit because you don't want to just give the, you want to make the second place earn it. So you just back off a little bit to stay under the tire. And you saw Sanchez do it just a little too much that allowed Zane to, and Zane's such a great driver himself. Speaking of which, I'm sitting here talking about this. There's so many great young drivers coming up. Like, I thought this was like a problem a few years ago, but I think we've got some awesome talent that is waiting in the wings to move up. So
now to find seats for him. That's the hard part.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But I mean, hey, there's probably a bunch of them, you know, going to be available at Stuart Haas, you know, with Harvick leaving. We don't know Eric's future. We don't know a lot of guys' future. So I think that there'll be rides available. It's just a matter, will the teams take these guys, you know, the inexperienced, be patient with them to make it. But I do, you know, I just want to give the other, you know, the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series their due time on this show as well, because we had two first-time winners in their respective series. And so congratulations to them. All the future is bright for them. And we saw some great racing.
Dear Danny, we've got some questions that we want to ask. Dear Danny, we need answers and we need them fast. We tried to ask Junior, but his answers were lame. And with DBC, it was more of the same. Now we're caught on you, cause you're our only hope. This ain't the racetrack, so maybe you won't choke.
Dear. Moving on to Dear Denny. Last week you mentioned being in the sim quite a bit. How much time do you spend in the sim each week? And what are you looking to learn when you're in the sim? I think this question is good for this week because we're headed into Bristol Dirt. And how much can you learn in a sim on a dirt track?
Yeah. I don't know. I say almost nothing, but it's the team will value it. I went to our 2311 victory lunch last week. Monster hosted a victory lunch for us. And so I saw this, you know, we have a little area where we have the static simulator. And of course the 2311 engineers were like, hey, since you're here, would you mind running a few laps of Bristol Dirt? And I'm like, oh my gosh, guys. I'm like, no, I'm not running it. And finally they gave me the old puppy dog eyes. And I'm like, okay, fine. I'll run a few laps. And so I ran in it and was like, okay, I got a good rhythm here. I don't know how much this really applies, but they were like, hey, you know, it was useful for us. So, yeah. So thanks. But, I won't run the sim this week. I typically only run the simulators on road courses. Clearly I need to run more simulator time on road courses. But I think just, I'm not saying it's not valuable, but you know, the experience I have on some of these racetracks, I feel like, you know, Richmond, right? What am I, you know, I spent a ton of time actually post Richmond last year, making sure we had the tire right on our simulator. And you know, it because if you do that, then all of a sudden the work that the team puts in through with their simulation driver or with the engineers, they can get your setup pretty dialed in before you even hit the racetrack. And it was apparent that you know, all the JGR cars were very strong. So that's kind of what I do, is if they need more information or they feel like a tire is not matching a track well, I'll spend some time in the simulator. But I mostly do it on road courses. But you have some guys, I know Tyler Reddick runs the simulator, Bubba runs the simulator weekly. I don't as much, because I feel like at times my time could be used more valuable in a different area. Sometimes it could be just studying data. I feel like I gain as much looking at data as I do actually running. So, I would say it's different for every driver.
So every team has a simulation driver, obviously,
no.
Right?
No? No. Okay. Only the top tier teams, to be honest with you, probably have a full-time simulator driver.
Okay. So those guys are in the sim running to help the teams figure out a baseline setup, right? When Bubba, correct me if I'm wrong at any point in this, when Bubba or Tyler are running, they're running to get a better feel for the track?
Yeah.
So
they're getting reps to be able to, when we only have 20 minutes of practice, the team wants the driver ready to go.
Yep.
Like, you know what line was fast in the simulator, do it in real life, right? I know that Tyler Reddick gave a lot of credit to Toyota Simulator for helping him getting fast. And then, you know, our employment of our Coke Series driver, Keegan Leahy at 2311. I watched it firsthand, but, you know, he made Tyler faster. There's no question about it. So I think that, simulator is and CFD, all the computers is kind of where our series is headed, being that there's less and less track time.
Do you, Denny, have any new routines or try new methods now that you may not have when you were younger to try and maximize recovery or make an effort to elongate your career? Perhaps the DH11 method.
The DH11?
The TB12 method.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're not the same, Jared. Stop trying to compare, please. I do. I'm so active, and I was actually talking to my crew chief about this, that I believe that, like, when I got out of the car at COTA and I was money. Like, I don't run cool shirts unless it's super hot outside. The last time I feel like I fell out of the seat, but I didn't fall out of the seat because we ran well and we finished well, was at Road America. I kind of did a semi faint after that event. That was before I ran cool shirts and it was boiling hot during that race. I believe what I do outside of racing helps my stamina in the race car. I got out of the car at COTA and everybody in front of me was laying down on the ground up against the door of their car, like, and you could see they were freaking gassed. And I went to Victory Lane, I saw Tyler Reddick, and I was like, he's like, do you have a protein shake or something? Like, I don't feel well. And he was just, he's gassed, right? And I joked around last week on this podcast and says, well, maybe I'm just not driving hard enough. But that's clearly not it, people. I think it's the cardio I have during basketball. It really keeps me good as far as, you know, my stamina in the race car. As an example, Jackson Gibbs, who is a pit crew member, who is a phenomenal athlete. He's a tire changer for Christopher Bell. We had him come play basketball. He was a fill-in sub in my basketball league. And the dude pulled himself out of the game multiple times because he's like, I'm dead. I got nothing. I'm weak in the knees. I don't feel well. And he's low 20s playing in a 40 to 50 old man league. And, like, we're all playing full minutes. And, like, finally with 3 minutes to go, he's like, I can't go any further. Like, I'm out. He's sweating. He was done. And it's like, I'm wondering how much that plays a factor in my stamina in these races where I don't get tired, because I just, you know, one, my heart rate is typically lower than the field, but two, I think that what I do outside the race car helps my stamina in the race car. And then afterwards, like, I try to, you know, I bought a cold plunge, put it out on the back porch here, and I try to get in it, you know, post race, I'll come home and get in it. You don't want to get in it 15, 20 minutes after you're super hot. But I am not one of those Joe Rogan guys that can get in a cold plunge at 40 degrees in the morning. Like, whew, those are the real heroes. Like, there's no way. My body has to be semi-hot for me to get in there and withstand it. But I'll get in the cold plunge for probably 6 to 8 minutes at 40 to 45 degrees. And it really helps me recover. I mean, I've got a bum shoulder. I've got to get this thing fixed sooner than later. I can't sleep on it. Can't lay on it. It wakes me up in the middle of the night. It's the same surgery I had on my left shoulder that I need to get done. It's a hereditary problem where my bone has grown into my rotator cuff. So yeah, when you get older, you better be on it with your physical regimen routine, because it is tough.
Now that you mention it, I've subbed for just about every basketball team in that hoop group league for all the same reason. I have no basketball skill. I can't score. They just want a 20-some-year-old guy.
We need a body.
Yeah, to run around and not get tired. I've never subbed for your team.
For good reason. You stink.
Or I'm trying to give you credit. You don't need a sub.
Yeah. Yeah, we have 6 people in our basketball league, so we rotate people in and out. But typically, if I have a man out on my basketball team, we'll just play 5. I expect all my guys to be able to run the entirety of the game, which is 44 minutes.
Now, last one here. It's funny that this past weekend, your race was marred by pit road penalties. A lot of people mentioned when we put out your actions detrimental bracket last week. If you haven't seen that, go check out the Dirty Mo YouTube channel.
It's on my page as well.
It's on your page as well.
At Denny Hamlin.
At Denny Hamlin, yes. Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
I'm on TikTok?
You are.
Hmm. Okay.
They asked why was pit road penalties not seeded 1 through 8? And now that you mentioned the differences in the pit roads in Richmond, right, how you can run around the top to gain more speed, is there a track where you have accumulated the most pit road penalties for a reason like that you can push it here or there that you
can't? I'm going to have to say Richmond's probably one of the top of the list for sure.
Because of that?
No. I don't know why. I mean, I certainly have cost myself victories at Richmond by speeding on pit road. And people in the media have to understand as well, not all pit road penalties are created equal.
That's what I'm getting at.
Many pit road penalties that I have throughout a year, and by the way, I've not been at the top of the list for the last few years, so that stereotype is wrong. You know, maybe total team penalties. I think last year we had 20 something, right? But, you know, speeding was just a very small bit of it. A lot of times I will speed after, say, I have damage and we're fixing something on pit road. I'll speed during there just to find limits of lights and stuff. Truthfully, there's not much to be gained nowadays from speeding on pit road. And never, you know, I can't remember the last time I sped on pit road by just being aggressive. Hey, I'm trying to push my lights. It's never usually that instance. It's always when I'm trying to learn something. There's a curve in the pit road, and so I'm trying to find where my limit is. Or B, I'm accelerating. Most of my speeding penalties have been accelerating out of the pit box, and when I shift to second gear, I'm too far past my lights. Like, I over-revved first gear too far, so when I shifted, I've been over that way. So, but again, pit road penalties, especially speeding under green, that is a game over. You're screwed. I said many times too, you cannot come from the back to the front now if you make a mistake. My second penalty was I was done anyway. It was, you know, 15 laps to go, and I'm running 13th or something like that. So again, I'm trying to get to a 11th and made a mistake and ended up finishing 20th. But we recovered from the first one, and we were fast. But it's just, you know, sometimes risk-reward, it's not worth it. I know throughout my career I've made countless speeding penalties that have cost me races. And, you know, Chris Gabehart, my crew chief, has really helped on the risk-reward. And I think over the last few years I've certainly done a better job at it.
So the stereotype is not accurate.
You can just look at real world stats. Now, there's some that are super exceptional. Kevin Harvick never has a speeding penalty. He's really good at it. Joey Logano, I think, has very few speeding penalties. I could be wrong, but you rarely see him go to the back. They're really good at it. They got a great craft.
We're headed to Bristol Dirt this weekend. Beginning of the show, you didn't sound too excited about that.
No, I am. I'm not excited about us racing on Easter. I think that's...
So it's an Easter thing, not a dirt thing.
I think it's wrong. But, you know, we have to realize the reason that we're doing it on Sunday night is because the ratings will be better than Saturday night. What's most logical is we race Saturday night and give these team guys, let them go home to their families on Easter. But, you know, we're in an important TV negotiating window. So we're going to do whatever it takes to be in the prime TV spot. And I think it might be on Big Fox as well. So
when it all shakes down at the end of the year, does that bump you get from racing on Sunday versus Saturday really matter? I guess every viewer matters,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm assuming it probably all matters, right? I mean, you probably take, you know, when NASCAR presents to TV that are an interested bidder, they're going to take the whole lump sum, right? And they're going to average it all out. So if you can get, you know, 500,000 more or a million more because you race on Sunday night, even though it's Easter, over Saturday night, it bumps their average up slightly, and it, you know, numbers equal numbers. And the more numbers you have, the more money you're probably going to get. So, you know, I know that's an important part of our schedule. It is just very, very tough for the teams because we've gone from two off weekends a year to one. And yeah, it's really tough on these teams. I wish we could come up with some sort of alternative to racing on Easter.
This is the third year now of the dirt race. Is that right?
Third season? Yep. Had a great shot to win the first one. Ran third. I was second to Joey Logano on a green white checkered. That race raced like an asphalt race. Like the track got so rubbered up that it was really like an asphalt race. I enjoy it. I really do. Last year was kind of a disaster. We had overheating problems. I think I eventually blew up because we had some issues with our screening of our cooling. But I do. I look forward to it. I think last year's race was super exciting with Chase Briscoe and Tyler Reddick. Kyle Busch luckily got that win. Whew, or else he would have been out of the playoffs last year. But man, it's that track, once it gets slicked off and, you know, they kind of just let it go and they're done watering it, that track slicks off where it is multiple grooves, and it's super fun to watch. And it certainly is different. Now, would I like to see it at a normal, you know, purpose-built dirt race? Yeah. You know, most notably because Bristol is just, that's a great racetrack, right? And to cover that track up with dirt, I think it worked the first year. I know that NASCAR really boasts on, we had the most engagement, the most excitement around the Bristol dirt race the first year we did it. But now we're in year three, right? And like eventually everything gets kind of, okay, well, we've seen that before. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see if they do it in 2024, but 50-50 maybe.
Any insight into who's going to be good this weekend?
Nope. No idea. I would listen to the boys at Dirty Modo, but, you know, I feel like I'm as educated as they are on it, but it's going to be super hard to pick the winner or the guys. I mean, Reddick, I don't know that has a ton of dirt experience, but he's been up front at most of these dirt races. Chase Briscoe, obviously will be a contender. You would think Kyle Larson, Christopher Bell, but you know, they really haven't been part of the story at the end of these races that much. A lot of it is because once these tracks get slickened off, it races a lot like an asphalt track. So, I did listen to Dirty Modo last week, and man, they were all in on Denny Hamlin last week in Richmond. And I think the professor might have said that I was going to win. Well, he was right until he was wrong. So, sorry for all the bettors out there that you know I let down. Trust me, I cost myself more than probably you lost on a ticket on me. That's for sure.
Well, I guess first things first this weekend is fingers crossed for the weather, because I keep looking at that.
I know.
There's rain in the forecast.
We were giving you in the bus about it. You're like, hey, you see, it's supposed to rain next Sunday. I'm like, Jared, it's more than 7 days out. Like, the meteorologists would tell you, like, 3 to 4 days out, you can pretty much book it. Whatever they say is going to happen is going to happen. But 7 days. Nah,
I agree.
Come on, bro.
But if I look at the forecast and it shows rain, like if it shows a rain cloud on the forecast, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, those aren't just going to change to sun, right? It may not rain all those days, but it's not going to completely flip-flop.
You're right.
We're going to get rain at some
and
point.
And I looked at the window, and Easter weekend here in Charlotte, I was so looking forward to it. It's supposed to be cold and rainy. Damn it. It's supposed to be nice all week except for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So, and we usually kind of have somewhat of the same weather as Bristol, only we're a little bit warmer.
It's only a couple hours away.
So, hey, this week, it's a big week for me. Appeal week. We'll talk about it. My appeal is on Thursday.
So will we know Thursday?
Yeah, we'll know Thursday, probably around the same time. I think Hendricks got released at 5 o'clock on their appeal day. Now, I don't even know actually the time that my appeal is. Hopefully it's early, because I got a father-daughter dance that I cannot miss. I probably need to coordinate that to make sure it doesn't run in. It shouldn't run into that, because that's not till 6 o'clock. But yeah, I'm prepared. I've got a case. We'll talk about that case on Monday, but I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I'm looking forward to getting in a room with those guys and having a discussion for sure.
There you go. Tune in on Monday. That's the best cliffhanger you can leave on this episode.
Yeah. Listen, you know me. I'm not gonna. I won't have many filters for sure. But probably in this instance, I should have a little more. But again, I'm gonna shoot you straight. I'm gonna be honest. This week's on DH. Up, wrecked JJ on accident. My fault, JJ. You'll hear from me.
Like, follow, subscribe at Dirty Mo Media across all socials, at Denny Hamlin across all socials. And I'm Jared D. Allen. We'll see you next week.
See you guys. A new episode of Next Level with Andrew Curlin is out now. Be sure to hit follow whenever you listen to podcasts and never miss another Next Level conversation.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram.